Manx Radio's update with Beth Espy.
Well, first of my good evening. Welcome to Tuesday's update. We'll take you through the main news of the day before 5:30. So coming up, we'll have the latest on what's been happening with the Bishop's vote. It was back in the House of Keys today. A full report coming up in a couple of moments. Also tonight, plans for silt disposal at a former mine have been thrown out. We'll be finding out why. The MUA is taking a fresh look at proposals for floating solar panels on Sulby Reservoir. What could that mean for the island? And on Holocaust Memorial Day, people across the Isle of Man are being urged to place a candle in their window, remembering all those who've lost their lives to genocide. All that, plus the latest weather, the traffic and the travel. We'll look at the roads that are still closed because of that storm this morning. And if you'd like to get in touch, you can email studio@manxradio.com. We'll start with a roundup of the main news headlines with Siobhan Fastamai.
Fastamai. The House of Keys has finished debating a bill which will remove the bishop's right to vote in Tynwald. Members agreed to an amendment from the Legislative Council recommending that the Act will start either the day after the tenure of the current bishop ends or on the fifth anniversary of its royal assent. The mountain road has now reopened, but motorists are being asked to drive to the conditions as there are still strong winds over higher ground, which are likely to remain throughout the evening. Meanwhile, a yellow weather warning is in force for coastal overtopping until 7:30 tonight. Proposals to treat and dispose of contaminated silt dredged from an Isle of Man marina at the site of a former mine have been thrown out by planners. The committee rejected the government's application to use land at Cross Vein Mine in Foxdale to repurpose the silt from Peel Marina. And the body which used to run the meat plant says it's shocked and dismayed by the substantial increase in fees paid to the board's non-executive directors. Last week, in response to a Tynwald written question, the Department of Environment, Food and Agriculture revealed a sharp increase in payments. Further afield, a support package for England's pubs has been announced after a backlash there over rising business rates.
From April, every pub in England will get 15% off its new business rates bill on top of the support announced at budget. Pubs' bills will then be frozen in real terms for a further 2 years.
UK Treasury Minister Dan Tomlinson's told MPs pubs on average should save around £1,650 next year. Reports suggest that the BBC is working on ways to use iPlayer to find homes that have not paid for a TV licence. And one battle after another leads the BAFTA film nominations with 14, but Hamnet's made history by getting 11 mentions, the most for a movie directed by a woman. There are your headlines. I'll have your news in full at 6.
Thanks very much, Siobhan. Now the weather brought to you by Manx Glass and Glazing. So those blustery showers will be quite widely spread this evening. A few of them could be heavy in places. Still that strong to gale force southeasterly wind. It's going to veer southerly later, decrease slightly and moderate further overnight as it will become mostly dry with clear intervals. Minimum temperatures overnight around 5. Tomorrow, largely dry and bright, sunny intervals and moderate to fresh winds. Top temperatures around 8. The winds are going to become stronger overnight tomorrow as well. And then Thursday will be mainly dry and bright. And there is a yellow weather warning still in force for coastal overtopping. It came into force at 4. It's until 7:30. Usual areas, Douglas Prom, Carstown Prom and parts of Shore Road and Rushen. To a lesser extent, Laxey and Ramsey Proms as well.
Manx Glass and Glazing can supply and install single, double and triple glazing. Call 674 573 or visit the showroom on the Snugbrough Trading Estate.
It's coming to 5:05. Well, the House of Keys has finished debating a bill which will remove the bishop's right to vote in Tynwald. So it really is quite a momentous day in Manx politics. But how did we get here? Amy Griffiths has been finding out.
I have to admit, now this has confused me a bit and I'm going to try my best to explain it in case it's confused you too. But basically, in 2023, Ramsey member Laurie Hooper presented a bill to his political colleagues calling for the bishop's vote to be removed from Tynwald. After it was supported by the House of Keys, the Legislative Council set up a select committee on the Isle of Man Constitution Bill of 2023 to look at the possible impacts of the decision. It then wrote a report based on its findings, and while it deliberately made no recommendation either for or against the bill, it did outline a number of potential implications. That meant the bill was able to continue progressing through the Manx legislative process, which is what's happened today as it came before members of the House of Keys to consider specific clauses. However, Onkin MHK Rob Callister made the point that the report from the Legislative Council Select Committee had never been formally received by the House of Keys. and therefore argued that it should be. He asked for his motion to be heard first, which his fellow MHKs agreed to. Mr. Callister then laid out some of his reasons for doing so.
Although the Legislative Council was established in June 2024, they made no formal recommendations for consideration by this House. However, they did raise serious concerns regarding the historical, constitutional and practical implications of removing the Bishop's boat at this time, particularly in relation to the island's constitutional identity and the potential loss of the Diocese of Sodermann.
There did seem to be a slight shift among some members following the information put forward in the report. Douglas Central member Anne Corlett, who supported removing the Bishop's vote, said she felt like the island was being held to ransom.
Voting rights in Parliament is directly linked to democracy. The Bishop should have a seat, but not a vote. The role in Tynwald is that of a moral compass. And I have to be completely honest, I can't help but feel that in some way my vote's being held to ransom. No bishop's vote, no diocese. And that puts me really between a rock and a hard place.
However, the initial mover of the bill, Mr. Hooper, disputed some of the concerns of his colleagues and the report.
How on earth do they make changes to the diocese? And they make reference to something called the diocese's pastoral and mission measure 2007. That's the measure that the church uses to do its internal reorganisations. That's what they've relied on in the past when they have done reorganisations like the one Mr. Thomas mentioned and the one that is mentioned in the report itself. The really interesting thing about this measure, the measure that allows the church to do things itself, is in section 66 of the measure that says the measure shall extend to the whole of the provinces of Canterbury and York except the Channel Islands and the Isle of Man. It can be extended to the Isle of Man by an Act of Tynwald or an instrument made under an Act of Tynwald that so provides. So in order to extend that power to make those changes to the Isle of Man, Tynwald has to approve that. Tynwald has to say, yes, we are content with you making changes to your diocese, and you can apply the measure. The church can do an internal review. They can decide, actually, we would like to get rid of the Diocese of Sodermann. They would like to merge it. That is absolutely within their power. What is not within their power is to make an Act of Tynwald. So I think if you don't want to lose the diocese, and I don't, the simple solution is don't vote for it.
After debating for nearly 2 hours, members voted in favour of receiving that report, with a slight amendment from Douglas Central's Chris Thomas to include that the House strongly supports the continuation of the Diocese of Sodor and Man. That wasn't the end of it, though, because Mr. Callister then asked members to adjourn the consideration of clauses of the Isle of Man Constitution Bill 2023. After a bit of back and forth, some agreeing and others feeling like it was a waste of time delaying it further, including Douglas North's David Ashford.
If you're against this, vote against it. But make a decision, get that decision recorded. Let's not keep going around the same circle and taking up more and more parliamentary time.
In the end, the MHKs didn't want to
road in the long grass,
as Mr. Callister proposed, and voted to consider the clauses. The only thing they had to decide was whether to add that the Act will start either the day after the tenure of the current bishop ends or on the fifth anniversary of its royal ascent. They agreed that it should be, and therefore it will now progress to the next stage, which is to be signed by Tynwald members before receiving royal assent and eventually being promulgated on Tynwald Day.
Amy Griffiths reporting there on what is quite momentous news this afternoon from the House of Keys, the Bishop's vote being removed. You can find out all the details on the Manx Radio website. A lot of comments from you on social media on this one as well. It's 8 minutes past five, and proposals to treat and dispose of contaminated silt dredged from an Isle of Man marina at the site of a former mine have been thrown out by planners. Now, the Planning Committee rejected the government's application to use land at Cross Vein Mine in Foxdale to repurpose the silt from Peel Marina before using it to fill in eroded areas at the site. Sean Cowper has the details.
Reasons for refusal included concerns over increased traffic during the project and a lack of consideration of alternative ways to dispose of the material, BBC Isle of Man reports. However, plans to extend the lifespan of the operation of a silt lagoon near Peel and turn a site at Portown already holding some of the material into a permanent store were approved. Peel Marina sees about 3,000 tonnes of silt containing traces of heavy metals, including zinc and lead, wash into the harbour from the River Neb each year. Efforts to deal with a build-up of 44,000 tonnes began more than a decade ago after concerns over the viability of berths in the marina. As a result, a temporary lagoon to dry silt at Ballaterson Farm was formed in 2020 by the Department of Environment, Food and Agriculture. Objecting to the plans, Kiri Jenkins of Arbury and Rushen Commissioners said part of the area around the mine was held under a statutory trust and not entirely owned by DEFA. She said there's been no meaningful public consultation on the plans and raised concerns about the ecological impacts of the works, which would have seen the installation of a settlement pond, temporary treatment plant, drainage ditches and landscape and fencing works. Mrs. Jenkins also argued the cumulative impact of the plans alongside proposals for a wind farm at Eyre Stain had not been taken into account. The decision on the plans split the committee 3 votes for and 3 against, with Chairman Rob Callister MHK siding against the application with a casting vote. However, the committee agreed to allow the silt lagoon near Peel's power station to continue work until the 31st of December next year. That site, which was originally given planning permission for 5 years in 2019, currently dries and stores the sediment with wastewater transported via a pipeline back to the marina. Plans were also approved to make a temporary silt store at Rockmount, adjacent to a government-owned quarry on Portown Road in Germen, permanent.
Sian Cowper reporting 11 minutes past five, and it might have been more than 3 weeks ago now, and we have obviously been talking about the windy weather today, but the impact of that snow day on the 5th of January is still generating conversation. So you might remember there was an attempt to reopen schools for half a day before it was later decided it was just better to keep them closed. In the House of Keys this morning, Arbury Castletown and Malou MHK Jason Morehouse saw answers from the Cabinet Office Minister David Ashford as to what lessons have been learned in respect of a staff bulletin.
Adverse weather situations can present a wide range of challenges, in fact, as we're seeing today. These events are dynamic and often evolve quickly, requiring decisions to be made that take account of a variety of circumstances. As such, a degree of flexibility is necessary to respond appropriately to individual situations. It is regrettable that despite the intention to provide clarity for staff, the staff bulletin issued on Monday the 5th of January 2025 resulted in some confusion, particularly for school-based staff within the Department of Education, Sport and Culture. This has already been recognised internally and changes have been agreed with the aim of avoiding similar confusion in the future. The first of those is that going forward, officers will develop a set of agreed pre-prepared staff communications to cover different scenarios, working with the Strategic Coordinating Group for use during future adverse weather events. This will enable clear and consistent messages to be issued quickly to staff. Secondly, where particular provisions apply to specific groups of staff, these will be clearly reflected in any future staff bulletins. Thirdly, any staff bulletin relating to adverse weather will in future be shared with the Department of Education, Sport and Culture in advance of issue to ensure alignment with its policies and procedures. Finally, the Isle of Man Government policy on attendance at work during adverse weather, road or travel conditions is currently under review, and any appropriate changes identified through this process will be made to ensure that it remains clear, fair and fit for purpose.
That's the Cabinet Office Minister David Ashford speaking in the House of Keys this morning.
Manx Radio Travel, serviced by Quayside Tyres.
So the main thing on the roads, the Mountain Road did reopen a couple of hours ago. The switchback, though, is closed until midday tomorrow. Also, Granville Street is going to be closed until 12 tomorrow. That's because of falling roof tiles. Everything else is pretty much okay, but do watch out because there's a lot of debris on the roads all over the place. Down at the airport, a few cancellations this afternoon, and the steam packet obviously been affected by the weather as well. So the next sailing is going to be the Manxman Heysham to Douglas sailing at 2:15 tomorrow morning.
Manx Radio Travel, serviced by Quayside Tyres. Call Quayside Tyres on 664417 to book your free vehicles winter check so your vehicle is safe for you and other road users.
It's coming up to 5:15. So we know here on Manx Radio there are a few subjects which get people talking. So seagulls is one of them, horse trams, and also parking. And for some residents in parts of Douglas, the problem with parking has been bubbling away for years. But it came sharply into the political spotlight almost exactly 12 months ago. So there was a petition launched by Andrea Kruger, which highlighted the challenges faced by people in Upper Douglas. It gathered more than 500 signatures and was then taken up by John Wannenberg, MHK. Who, interestingly, is not the MHK for the area, but of a neighbouring constituency. So he brought the issue to Tynwald. He called for the area to be designated residents-only parking. And while that didn't succeed, there was a commitment from the then Infrastructure Minister that a full parking review would take place. Well, fast forward a year, that review still hasn't happened, and John Monnenberg says he's far from impressed.
Just because it's not a priority for the department doesn't mean that it shouldn't be done as a matter of urgency. And I think allowing 1 year for it to be done is more than reasonable. The fact is, the minister at the time gave a commitment that she would do a review, no matter what comes out of that. And in doing that, she created an expectation, and that expectation has not been served. Now, I've written to the new infrastructure minister this week, but I thought since it's been exactly a year, then it's a good time to make it public again.
John Monnenberg, MHK. Well, I caught up with Andrea Kruger to get her reaction to this as well.
Really pleased that John is following up with the DOI about the progress, and the situation, of course, hasn't gotten any better. And it's not so much in the daytime, it's in the evening time when the disc zone ends and anybody can park. That's when it gets difficult. When everybody comes home from work, it's already difficult to find a parking space that's not on double yellow lines. So if we get another 150 to 180 residential units with insufficient parking, where is everybody going to park?
I suppose it could be argued, though, Andrea, and I'm going to play devil's advocate here, that if parking was such an important issue, let's talk about you specifically, then why wouldn't you get a house that has a parking space?
I think that's the solution, but many people can't afford it. So when I went from door to door, quite a number of people said, who had lived there for 20 years, they've seen the situation get worse and worse over the decades, but they wouldn't be able to sell their house for a price that would allow them to buy somewhere else with a parking space and with less problems.
What would be the solution as far as you see it?
To me, the solution is that new developments have to provide enough parking for their tenants or owners, plus a certain number of visitors. We all have visitors and they need to park. And obviously the petition suggests, as has been done in many boroughs in London, has been done in Cambridge, that parking is restricted to residents and occupants of newly built do not get residents' parking permits for roadside parking.
What happens now? What's your next step?
I'm looking for somewhere else to live.
It's really that serious?
Yes.
That is Andrea Kruger. And we have invited the DOI to respond about where that review of parking in Upper Douglas is up to, but we haven't heard back just as yet. 17 minutes past five. Well, a Manx government spokesperson has confirmed there have been no policy changes for island residents who are travelling within the common travel area. So this is the long-standing open border zone comprising the United Kingdom, Ireland, Isle of Man and the Channel Islands. However, government says it is aware of a small number of visa holders being stopped at the UK border and says it's engaging with UK Home Office and UK Border Force to minimise the risk of similar incidents in the future. Chanel Suku reports.
It follows an incident involving an Isle of Man resident at Heathrow Airport last week. The resident, who's asked to remain anonymous, was told by border officials that while she is an Isle of Man resident, she's only permitted to transit through the airport and does not have the right to remain in the UK for leisure purposes. Speaking to Manx Radio, she said she felt absolutely awful and humiliated, adding that the experience was particularly hurtful as a law-abiding resident who lives, works and contributes to the island. In response, a government spokesperson said immigration permission issued by the Isle of Man in the form of a wet ink passport stamp remains fully valid and is recognised by UK Border Force at all UK ports of entry. They added that this position is clearly set out in the UK Home Office's published Common Travel Area guidance, with permission continuing to be granted using ink stamps, which remains valid under Schedule 4 of the Immigration Act of 1971. While the UK plans to move towards a fully digital immigration system, the spokesperson said the Isle of Man is working closely with the UK and with other Crown dependencies to ensure continued alignment, so that Isle of Man immigration documentation remains recognised both internationally and at UK borders. Residents who believe they have been incorrectly challenged at a UK border are encouraged to contact the Immigration Service so individual cases can be investigated and resolved appropriately.
Chanel Suku reporting there. It's coming up to 20 past five, and today is Holocaust Memorial Day, and everyone across the Isle of Man is being asked to light a candle at 8 p.m. in memory of all those who've died as a result of all acts of genocide. Now, we're going to hear in a moment from Bishop Tricia Hillis, but first, here's Carol Jemson, who's a member of the island's Jewish community.
Normally, we just have Holocaust Memorial commemoration in a building, and this year we hoped for a community event. So lighting a candle, which is traditional among many faiths in memory of people who died, has a very powerful message. And if we all do it in memory of Holocaust and all other genocides, then we reflect that it could have been us. Our lives could have been stolen. So my idea was that it becomes a community event. You can use a synthetic candle. Any candle that you feel was appropriate, just to put it in the window, in solidarity with everyone murdered for who they are or what they are, not because they've done anything. And that's the biggest nightmare. People are killed and persecuted for being themselves. I do know a lot of Holocaust survivors didn't talk about it until later on in their lives, when they realised that if they didn't talk about it, it would be lost in history. Their testimony is a responsibility, and that's how I feel. I feel that responsibility to make sure no victim of any genocide is ever forgotten. They had their future stolen, not for anything they'd done, just for who they are.
And that's why this annual commemoration is so significant. We know that similar genocides, different perhaps in character, but the same underlying hatred and suspicion of one another and the dehumanisation still stalk our world. So that's why I'll be wanting to join with others across the island, I hope, in lighting a candle that says that actually we affirm our commitment to standing against hatred in all its forms and our commitment to sharing life together.
That is Bishop Tricia, and before that, Carol Jemson. And after Update this evening, there's a special programme to mark Holocaust Memorial Day. It's called The Tattooist of Auschwitz, where Christy De Haven is in conversation with the author of the best-selling book. That's Heather Morris. You'll be able to listen live at 5:30, or you can find the podcast in the Island Life section at manxradio.com. Now, the potential for solar panels floating on the surface of Sulby Reservoir is one scheme being considered by the Manx Utilities Authority. Now, this was first mooted back in 2022. The idea was raised again in the House of Keys this morning. Jason Morehouse asked for an update from the authority on plans to install 10 megawatts of solar capacity on publicly owned buildings and infrastructure, such as the NSC. Well, the chair, John Wannenberg, told the chamber that while those plans are in progress, other options for delivering solar power across the public estate are also being considered.
Manx Utilities has been focused on the proposal to deliver some rooftop solar at the National Sports Centre. As set out in the written answer provided last year, the NSC scheme required detailed structural and electrical assessments. I can update the Honourable Member that further rooftop condition surveys are now being implemented, and Manx Utilities is coordinating with the Department of Education, Sport and Culture and the Department of Infrastructure to align all the planned works. Furthermore, Manx Utilities also has considered other options for delivering solar across the public estate. Initial feasibility work has taken place for a ground-mounted solar installation at Balladool in the north of the island. In addition, Manx Utilities is reviewing the potential for a floating solar scheme on Selby Reservoir. This review includes capacity assessment and, crucially, any potential impact on water quality and our essential water stock. Feasibility surveys for both Balladool and Selby will take place this year, aligned with ecological assessment windows.
That is Chair of the MUA, John Wannenberg. Now, if you're a fan of all things Manx, and especially Manx folklore, then this one's for you, because as a former UCM art student who's been making waves in the fashion world in recent years, and she's back on the island and turning her attention to film. Shannon Samuel's currently working in costume design for the film industry and is also the creative director of a platform supporting emerging designers in sustainable fashion from around the world. Her TT-inspired collection, created using recycled motorbike leathers and motorsport materials, was showcased at the official New York Fashion Week in 2022. Well, now she's working on a brand new short film. It's called She, which is the Manx Gaelic word for fairy. It's a dark coming-of-age story inspired by Manx folklore, and she's been telling Lewis more.
So it started as a poem, and I kind of was chipping away at it for years. And she is this idea of this other person. So I think through my journey in London, there was this sort of internal thoughts and, you know, questioning where you sit in such a big city. So as we all do have an internal dialogue, I really wanted to bring that internal dialogue out into a person. So that's what the She is. So it's a short film that's kind of evolved into a short film over the past, probably 6 years. I've had this idea And yeah, it's very set in 2006. So it's
okay.
A praise on emo culture and the noughties, but mixed in with magic realism. Yeah.
It sounds dead up many people's streets who I'm thinking of right now. But aside from, of course, being inspired by the Isle of Man, where else do you draw inspiration from personally? Are there many other artists on the island as well who you'd like to collaborate with, perhaps?
I need to. What I would love to do is actually work a bit more with local talent. Whenever I come over, I do get involved a lot at the college, and it's amazing, because even the people that I met at college when I came over during COVID, there's one of them that I then took on as my intern in London, and now she's doing mad fashion shows, and she's like really high up in production for London Fashion Week.
Okay.
So I really, really, really love working with local talent. Yeah. So now that I'm back, I will sort of be looking out for that.
That is Shannon Samuel talking to Lewis. You can keep up to date with the She Project on Instagram. It's 25 past five. Sport is brought to you by The Print Shed, and also tonight, Darren Timpson.
First of mine, Isle of Man professional boxer Sam Rennie has announced he'll be going for a second major title. He's set to compete for the Australian National Boxing Federation Australasian Super Featherweight Championship. Rennie will face Fijian Shamil Ramonj on the 13th of March in Northbridge, Australia. The Magsman currently holds a WBC Australasia Silver Super Featherweight title. His last win came on the 28th of November with a unanimous points victory over Rivo Renkung, and is unbeaten in all six bouts in his career so far. In cycling, Ireland resident Ben Swift came 95th in a Tour Down Under at the weekend. His best results of the Australian events came in the third stage when he crossed the line in Nairn in 16th. The competition started with a prologue in Adelaide. Stage 1 then began in Tanunda, with the final event ending in Stirling. Swift also finished 32nd in the first stage, 98th, 82nd and 99th. Manxman Max Walker also competed at the event with a best of 68th in Stage 2. His other results were 135th, 98th and 117th, but a DNF in the final stage meant he didn't get a place on the final classification. And a Manx swimmer picked up three gold medals for the Isle of Man at the Lancashire Championships in Manchester over the weekend. Competing in the 14 age group, Oscar Madrill set a new junior Ireland record in the men's 800m freestyle by over 16 seconds, with a winning margin of 34 seconds. He also won the men's 200m medley and men's 400m freestyle. Oscar then managed to pick up a further medal as he came second in the 100m men's freestyle. Meanwhile, there were five more medals for the island as five youngsters finished third on the podium.
Thank you very much indeed, Darren. That is all from Update this evening. Thank you as ever for your company. Coming up next, that special Island Life programme this evening to mark Holocaust Memorial Day, Christy is in conversation with Heather Morris. That's the author of the best-selling book, The Tattooist of Auschwitz. You can listen to it live, as I say, from 5:30, or find the podcast in the Island Life section at manxradio.com. Then Chris Kinley will be here at 6 p.m. with Greatest Hits. It's the folk show with John Barker at 9. And then Dave Moore will be with you from 10 with After Hours. Ben and the Breakfast Team will be here from 6 tomorrow, and Update will be back at 5. So whatever you're doing this evening, have a good one, and we'll talk to you then.